Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome everyone to the Storybox. This is the place to be if you're a lover of stories, learning new and interesting things, growing abundantly, and if you want to improve your overall life. My name is Jay Fansom, and I've made it my purpose to unbox and share the amazing stories from people of every profession all over the world. I'm grateful that you're here today. Let's journey into the story box together and hear more about whose story will be unboxed today. Welcome everyone back to the Storybox. For those of you that are new and tuning in for the very first time, my name is Jay Fansom and I am the host of the Storybox. I get to speak with some very, very incredible people each and every week and unbox some just awe-inspiring stories. And this week is going to be a massive, massive week because I have four women that are absolutely incredible in each of their fields. And it's going to be a very informative deep dive into each and every one of these women's stories. So I thought I'd start off the week with a giant bang in terms of the caliber of guests. So I decided to release my guest today, who is none other than Sarah Jakes Roberts. Now, for those of you that don't know who she is, you're about to get to know more about her, but I cannot recommend this woman's message highly enough. But Sarah Jakes Roberts is redefining what it means to be a modern woman of faith. Her messages spread throughout the world, defying cultural, religious, gender, and socioeconomic boundaries. Whether through her best-selling books or viral messages, it only takes a few minutes of connecting with her to understand why she becomes an instant favorite. And trust me when I say this, she is another favorite of mine to speak to, that is, and just get to know more about her. But Sarah has a unique way of reaching people who are seeking to make peace with their past, maximize their present, and deepen their relationship with God. Alongside her husband, Torre Roberts, she co-pastors the Potter's House at one of LA and the Potter's House over at Denver. With her down-to-earth personality, contemporary style, and revelatory messages, there's no question why she is an emerging thought leader for this generation, yet her growing influence came by surprise. And Sarah says, if you would have told me 5 years ago that I would be in full-time ministry, I would have asked you if you were talking to the right person. At 23 years old, she was tempted to follow her journey as a woman battling insecurities, teen pregnancy stigma, low self-esteem, toxic relationships, and depression to define the rest of her life. It wasn't until she was in her darkest moment that she realized she only had two options: settle or evolve. Sarah dared to harness the wisdom of her past wounds and apply them to the hope for her future. The process of transforming from the insecure and fearful young girl that she was into the powerhouse wife, mother, businesswoman, and leader that she took, it took dedication, discipline, resources, and spiritual growth, just to name a few things that it took. Her passion is to utilize her experiences, insight, and influence to help every soul she encounters to evolve into the best version of themselves. In 2017, Sarah launched Women Evolve, a ministry that focuses on incubating every woman to her fullness. Since its conception, Women Evolve has been successful at reaching and guiding thousands of women to awaken healing, wholeness, and love for themselves and others. And that's why I'm excited to tell you about her new book, which is actually titled Women Evolve. And you can go and get a copy anywhere books are sold. I highly encourage you, if Sarah's message resonates with you, overcoming fears and knowing that you are worth something in life and that you need to really evolve in your life to grow and to become better as a human being and understand that God does love you, then go and get a copy of this book, because I had an absolute joy and blast being able to speak with Sarah. I had followed her message for quite some time before getting the absolute privilege of getting to sit down with her and unbox certain elements of her life that she doesn't always talk about, which was really, really exciting. So if you do get something from this episode, please share it around. It spread the message. I believe this is a message that needs to be spread far and wide to broader communities, to not just women, but also men as well. But I hope that you do get something from it. If you do also want to see the full video, go on YouTube and watch that now. Also, all the links are in the show notes. Make it easy for you. Before you go, please leave a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It goes a long way once again. So that's enough from me. It is time to dive into the story box. So we're going to evolve our learning today in the story box by listening to the incredible story of none other than Sarah Jakes Roberts.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I'm glad we were able to make it work.
The excitement is really evolving for me right now because I love your message. I love this book that you've come out with at such a very special time. I can't wait to get into it with you in just a moment. But before we do, I normally start off all my conversations with one particular question I think you might like, which is, what does success look like for you?
Okay, that's a good question. Success looks like living fully, honestly, and authentically in the life that I have been given. I don't think success is like this destination, like once I've achieved X, Y, and Z, then I will be successful. I think it's finding the success, the spirit of success, the spirit of gratitude in wherever I am right now. I think it's a successful spirit, not a destination.
Mm. Have you ever found it difficult to be grateful for what you have right now?
Oh, definitely. So many times. I think the pandemic was just one of those moments where I felt like my life has been completely shifted in a way that I don't know when we're going to recover. And I liked my life. You know what I mean? Like, I did not need the pandemic. Now, I know no one needed it, but it's like, you know, I was really headed towards somewhere. I felt like I was making progress, and it was difficult to not be bitter, frustrated, and upset. But then I was brushing my teeth one day in the middle of the pandemic, really early on. I was brushing my teeth and I was like, at least this hasn't changed. And all of a sudden, instead of thinking about all of the things that had changed, I started focusing on those small things that had not changed. And I saw my attitude begin to pivot because there was some steadiness, even in the midst of change and transition. And then I was able to create once I felt steady again.
I love that. Why do you think that people find it difficult to be grateful in the present moment?
Well, there's this hole in our life, and whether that hole is huge or pin size, the fact that we feel like there's something missing is difficult for us to work through. Mm. And I think for a lot of people, they're able to channel that into work ethic. But for some of us, we can't help but see that hole as a reflection of our worth. My worth has a hole in it. My identity has a hole in it. And now I am not all that I could be because of this hole. And so I think anytime someone feels inadequate or insufficient, that it's difficult to be gratitude for all of the other puzzle pieces that you can see. And yet, if we don't find that, we're going to always have something we could be doing better. So it really does take perspective to get to a place where you don't mind being holy, but still used.
I love that. Have you ever struggled with finding your own worth and your purpose?
Oh, goodness. I have spent more time struggling with my worth, struggling with my purpose than I have spent in it. And I feel like people don't always get that I spent more time. So I am 32 now, and I've probably been in purpose strong like the last 5 to 6 years. And so we're still talking 26 years of, I don't know who I am. I don't know if I had value. I had a child as a teenager. That's another hole. That's something else that made me feel inadequate. I went through a divorce. And so I struggled with all of those things. And so now that I have found purpose, it's I have to let my purpose speak to that part of me that wandered for so long, to tell that person who wandered, like, they're talking to you. You finally have made it into this place of purpose. And that helps me to be more present and to be full in the moment that I'm standing in.
Mm. I've got a couple of questions coming from that response. The first one I want to go into, you mentioned you had a teenage pregnancy and trying to navigate that all area. I'm curious, did you feel ashamed at all? Did you have a sense of guilt coming from that?
Oh, goodness. That's all I felt. That's all I felt, having that teenage pregnancy. I mean, I think that when you're an adult, it's so easy to forget what it was like to be a child. And I have an 11-year-old daughter now, an 18-year-old son. We've got a blended family of six children, so I have a lot of people in my house. But when I imagine my pregnancy with my daughter's naivety in mind, it makes me realize just how traumatizing it was. Outside of the pressure of how am I going to care for a child, just the mental toll that it takes to go from thinking, oh, I'm going to get in trouble for being pregnant, as opposed to my life is going to change forever from being pregnant. And I know immediately that everything that I thought I knew about my innocence, my worth, my value diminished the moment that I had to live out that reality. It's funny, my mom told me when I met my husband that she had not seen me smile with all of my teeth since before I got pregnant. I think that that just speaks to how much of a weight and a depression I sunk into instantaneously.
Hmm. I believe you grew up in a Christian household. Yeah. Was it because of the fact that there was this stigma around, okay, you can't get pregnant, that's what made you afraid? Or was there something more to it than that?
It was definitely the Christian household, but even outside of a Christian household, you don't even have to be a Christian to think that a girl who got pregnant as a teenager is not necessarily the person we celebrate in society and culture. I think I would have probably even made it out a little bit better if I felt like, okay, the church doesn't understand me, but at least out here at my school or in the world, I'm accepted. But we're talking about something that isn't socially accepted no matter where you are. Mm. And so that is an added layer that I've actually never even really thought about until expressing it here, but that is an added layer of trauma, of feeling like I have nowhere to go where this is okay. And yet that isolation kept me longing for someone to tell me it's okay, it's okay.
I'm curious about why this is the case, because so many people, I have no doubt, have experienced this very thing, the same thing you've experienced, and they do feel lost. They do feel like they're not worth anything, yet they've created life. There's a stigma, especially in Christian circles as well. We kind of shame them. And it's like, this is not God's way, you know. But then you got to understand that we are human. We do make mistakes, but ultimately God has allowed it for a reason. Yeah. So I've always been fascinated by why in the world do we shame people? We belittle people for this kind of mistake. And should we see it as a mistake?
You know, I love this question. I love this pathology in general, because none of us are living God's way, right? God's way was us in the garden. We know how he said it, that we were in the garden. We were traipsing around. So none of us are in God's original intention. And I think the church doesn't know what to say when someone isn't living God's way that can help them still navigate their way. Okay. So this is my way now. I'm 13 years old and I'm pregnant. If I'm not doing it God's way, does that mean I don't have a path at all? That's why I love the story of Eve, because Eve, I mean, she is the one who set it off in not doing it God's way. And yet God doesn't abandon her. And we never tell this part of the story. We just kind of like kick her over to the corner and we're like, you messed it up for us all. We don't want to talk about you anymore. And I love this. And when God says to them, if you eat from this fruit, you will surely die. Like, they don't die the moment they eat from the fruit. but something in them died. Something in them died. And I think that we as churches and, you know, people of faith who are in community have to be willing to ask ourselves, when someone eats from forbidden fruit, what in them dies? And are we willing to do the work to bring it back to life?
My goodness, that was so powerful. My brain just spun for a moment because I have never actually thought of it like that myself. It's a fascinating line of thought, because I think, do you believe that it's kind of like your purpose has died inside, or is it something else that has died?
I think that your confidence and your ability to connect with God and the world around you in truth dies. I mean, we see that immediately. Okay, we're in a journey here and I love it. Immediately, Adam and Eve realize that they're naked and cover themselves. I think that their sense of freedom, that I can be who I am without fear of judgment or ridicule or criticism, dies immediately. And if we go even further, I mean, they eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which means, what did they have before then? A blank canvas. And now what has died is this blank canvas. And now I have to categorize my experiences as good or evil. And that wasn't God's original intent. We were supposed to just be here experiencing life, but now we've got good and evil. And we know what happens when we feel like we've got too much evil in our life or too much good in our life. There's this war that takes place within us, and it's difficult to navigate that battle.
It's kind of like we're wrestling with our spirit. We know innately what is right, but then for some reason we go against it. And then we've got to come back to what is good. And doing what is good is hard. Everyone knows that. So I'm curious about, how can we set things in our life to follow what is good every single day? To, I guess, a lot of people, they struggle with fears in their life. And fear is such it's an ever evolving thing, right? It never really goes away, which kind of sucks. But then again, is it a good thing? If that question is sort of articulated well enough for you to understand.
No, for sure. Fear does serve a purpose. I think even when we look at sociology and the way that humans have changed over time, fear is something that was used in order to protect ourselves, right? It's when it goes from this sense of protection to oppression, but we don't always know where that line is. So when we say, I'm never going to date again because this last person broke my heart, it sounds like protection. And maybe for 2 to 3 months, it is protection. But when we're 6 years down the road, now it's oppression, because we have decided to take what was meant to protect us, and now it is oppressing us. I mean, the scripture talks about God not giving us this spirit of fear. That's when something that is supposed to be a passing emotion has now become the spirit in which I show up in the world. God, it doesn't say that he doesn't, you know, have fear in our world at all, because fear does exist, but that spirit of fear that ends up taking over our identity is not a part of God's plan. Ideally, had Eve not eaten from that fruit, we wouldn't even know fear's name, but we do know it now. And so now we have to understand what our fears are telling us, what rules we're following by that our fears created, and decide whether or not we want to allow fear to stay in the driver's seat of our destiny.
Fear also stops the sound mind. It stops us from seeing who we really are. And it stops us from looking towards God, because for some reason, we get afraid that God is going to judge us. He's got an iron hand of ruling. He's going to, you know, do nothing but bad, or bring bad into our life. But if I look at my life and all the things that I've been through, and I'm only 24, and I've been through hell and back, I look at it from the point of view of, yes, I was afraid in that moment, but each and every time that I went to God in the times that I did, compared to the times that I didn't, I was actually at peace more when I turned to God and asked him for help. Because I love the, I don't know if you've heard of the poem Footprints in the Sand.
Yeah.
He's never left us in the time of being afraid. He's enabling us. He's giving us all the tools necessary to move forward. And then also the poetic element to that poem is he's carried us through that period of time. I mean, it's a beautiful picture, but then we still get stuck. And it's like this. I love the next part of the verse. He gives us peace, of love, and of a sound mind to be able to move forward from fear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, sometimes in church we talk about the fear of God, but I don't know if we break it down the way that we should, because the fear of God is not, I'm so afraid of him. And that's what I think keeps people away from God, is this idea, I'm so afraid of him that I'd rather not bring myself to him. It is this reverence for the holiness of God, like the reverence that you would have if you met like a president or a king or someone who was just this figure that was so big that you knew I'm supposed to bow down and have this level of respect. Because when we have that level of fear and reverence for God, we present ourselves, but we do it with such humility and with such trust, because we know that you are so much greater than I am. You are the creator of all things. So wherever you send me, whatever you say about me, I'm going to receive it. Like if, you know, President Barack Obama told me I was the most intelligent woman, I may add it to my bio, you know, because I would be like, Obama said, I am so intelligent. But God says you were fearfully and wonderfully made, and we can't accept that. And I think we have to be willing to do the work to get low enough to say, whatever you say about me, I'm going to have the faith to receive it and allow it to become a part of my identity.
The faith aspect is so important. Yet, I believe us as humans, we complicate it. He said, I love the only have, I believe it's in Matthew, but if you only have the faith, the size of a mustard seed, that's all it is. And the mustard seed is like how big? Like,
yeah, oh,
God,
so small.
So small. And that picture for us is an example of saying, okay, yes, we have these moments of doubt. We have these moments that we don't understand or we don't know, but that is okay. That is part of being human. And for us to have that ability to believe that God is still there, he hasn't come off the throne, God is not going to make our life worse. And I think you're right. I think that we talk about God's judgment, you know, we create fear amongst the brethren, amongst people. And we leave the church thinking, oh my goodness, what's going on here? But that shouldn't be the case at all. And I like how you said, if we break it all down, I think that's an important distinction to make. But one question that I do want to ask you, speaking about fear actually, is do you currently have a fear in your life that you're still yet to overcome?
I do. I probably have a lot of them.
Mine's spiders.
I am learning to not have fear when it comes to even raising my children. So my son is 18. He's moving into adulthood. He's itching to be free. I can sense it. I feel it. And, you know, I'm afraid as a parent because it's a big, scary world out there. And when you're desperate to be free and desperate to explore yourself, I know that you just open yourself up to so many things because you're looking for your identity, right? And I know he's got to go through his process, but I think as a parent, I'm fearful about that. So I'm working through releasing my control, remembering that he started with God and all of those things you have to tell yourself, but also giving him wisdom as much as he allows.
I love that. I'm curious about for a young parent at the moment that is going through the same thing you are going through, how would you talk to someone? How would you walk them through this same journey? If you can speak to someone right now that is struggling with control, with releasing their own child into, I guess you could say, the wild.
You know, we've had to do this before. when they were babies and they were sleeping in our room and then moved into their own rooms. We had to trust that they would be okay, that they would stay breathing throughout the night. When they started going to school by themselves, we had to trust that the teacher would look after them and understand that they need their blanket for nap time. What I have found in my relationship with God is a lot of times we experience the same thing. It just shows up in a different form. And so if we can be comforted, I am saying we right now, if we can be comforted by the fact that we've had to do this before and that we didn't lose them in the process, then maybe we won't hold on so tight that we leave marks and wounds on them, but we'll understand how to gently let go so that they can become, but they still remain within reach.
What do you love the most about being a mom?
Oh, goodness. I love seeing their personalities show up. I love seeing them just stand up in their own personalities. I mean, we have six, we're a blended family. We've got six people in our house, six children, and I call my roommates, all live in our house. And I love seeing them show up in the world as themselves, like, and doing that with confidence. My 5-year-old runs our house and my 11-year-old is trying to run our house. So watching them compete for office, they're campaigning every day in my house. If you guys hated the political season here in America, let me tell you, I'm in one every day at my house, but it's great to see them.
I can only imagine. You know, I come from a very small family, but you know, I have two brothers. I'm the middle child. So I completely understand the cry out and the arguments.
Oh, yeah. It's spicy.
Yeah, it does. It does get spicy, eh? But what has been for you, Sarah, what has been the greatest lesson that you've learned being a teen mum compared to being the age you are now as a mum?
That kids are really forgiving. They're really, really forgiving. You know, I felt so bad when I had my son just because I knew that there were two parent homes that were probably doing it very well. In my mind at 14, I'm like, someone's doing all of the right things. They're not moving from house to house. They're not wondering how they're going to make ends meet. And yet when my son talks about our time together, he's like, you know, it's been me and you since the beginning and it was so amazing. And I'm so proud of who you were and you fought and you stayed in it. And it just reminds me that kids are really forgiving. You know, parents aren't always apologetic, but kids are really forgiving. And I think that we could undo a lot of damage that we see in families if parents could be more apologetic so that they could receive that forgiveness. Because when we wound our children and don't acknowledge it and then ask for forgiveness, they end up becoming adults with wounds.
That's a good point to actually raise. But speaking about your parents, when this actually happened, what was the lesson that your father or mother taught you that you hold dear to your heart even today?
My father told me that I could beat this. He's like, you can beat this, but you're going to have to hit the ground running. So that's my father. He's like trying at this point. He's like, we're in a fight. You need to be Tyson. Okay. You might have to bite some ears in the process. You can beat this, but you're going to have to hit the ground running. And I keep that even like I'm nervous. I've been out talking about the book and sometimes I get nervous and I start feeling like the little shy introvert girl. And I can like hear my dad like fight, fight, fight. And my husband is just like my dad. So he's like fight, fight, fight. And then my mother, it's no wonder that I don't need some type of like help because my mother on the other hand is like, you can rest. Take your time. So I got one parent telling me to fight and the other parent telling me to rest. And it is that crazy combination actually that has allowed me to know when to show up and fight and when to sit down and allow the fight to go on without me.
It's a good balance. I like it.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to open up about this part of your life? Because it is a very personal part. And I guess it opens you up to different judgments, to especially in the Christian circles.
Yeah.
Especially. So why did you decide to open up about this?
So I got pregnant before social media. If I were the age that I was when I got pregnant now, this would be something that would be like on TMZ. It would be news. And So when I started blogging, people started connecting with my journey and they started following me. Now, this is like 10 years after I got pregnant, I started blogging and people would invite me to speak. And at the time, I wasn't necessarily talking about the time that I got pregnant. I was just talking about overcoming your fears and having self-love and finding your worth. And people were so inspired by the words, but they didn't know the cost of those words. And so my dad was hosting a conference and he asked me if I would introduce him. I'm not typically one for public speaking, but I just was like, whatever, here I am, let me do it. And I decided to share it on that stage and from that platform because I wanted people to know who I really was. I didn't want them to just one day discover I was a teen mom and feel like, you know, I, you know, maybe lied to them or misled them in some way. And what I thought would kind of discredit the work that I'd done actually ended up propelling it. Because people felt like, man, now that I know just who is saying these words to me, I can accept them even more because I have my own secrets and my own wounds that I'm working through as well.
Mm. And for your life, Sarah, knowing God as your Lord and Savior, yeah. For two questions coming out of this one. When was the moment that you made God real in your heart when you accepted Him? And secondly, should I ask you a second question?
Go ahead. Go for it.
So the second question is when in your life that you least expected it, did God show up in a big way?
Okay. I got you. Okay. So the first time that God became real, like for real in my life, this is my second marriage. I was married before. It was a toxic marriage. There was certainly some, you know, emotional abuse. There were some physical things that happened. And I ended up at a CPS office as a result of one of our altercations. And CPS here is like Child Protective Services. And I'm sitting there and they're talking about what kind of mother are you. Now this teen mom fear has become a reality as a grown woman because someone is talking to me about my mothering. And I was leaving the CPS office. And that is when I made God real for my life because I realized that my plans, my idea of trying to fix my life and following my path so that I could wrap it up neatly and then present it to God wasn't working. And so I just surrendered. I just let it all fall apart. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm lost. I'm confused. I'm in this marriage. And if I keep going down this road, I could lose my kids. I could end up in prison. And I don't like who I am anymore. And that's when I made God real because I trusted who He saw more than I trusted who I was becoming. And I started chasing after that image. And that's when I saw my life evolve. Mm-hmm. And I will say to your second question, God has shown up for me in a big way with this book, like the most recent. Now He's shown up for me in a lot of different ways, but with Woman Evolve, God has shown me that there is a space for this type of women's movement and everything that we've been able to do with Woman Evolve, from our tours to our conferences to even the book. It breaks all of the rules. Like our book right now is number 15 in all of the like millions of books on Amazon, and it's like number one in a few categories. We did like 20,000 in pre-orders, and like we haven't had any national press. I'm a speaker, but I don't speak every Sunday, so I speak when I get invited, but I've been going on my social media, like, and it's just, the publisher's never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like it, but I know it's a God thing.
Mm. So speaking about your book, why did you decide to write it now? And then another question is a two-part question. your title is Woman Evolve, which is singular woman. Why not have it Women Evolve? Because you do talk about women a lot as a plural aspect in your book.
I love that you asked this question because people say my book is Women Evolve and I don't even correct them at this point because I know why they're saying it, because that's what it sounds like it should be called. But it's Woman Evolve because it's a command. And I feel like those are two words that every woman should say to herself. woman evolve, woman evolve. When we say women, we automatically exclude ourselves from the image. But there's something about saying woman evolve. And I felt like the timing was just perfect for it. For this book, the movement started because I had this revelation about Eve. And I tell this story all the time. I used to say that when I got to heaven, I was just gonna like pull Eve to the side and like just argue with her for a minute. Like, girl, you have one job. And and I don't know if you know how the story played out for the rest of us, but it sucked. Okay. And but I learned that you can't like be unforgiving and make it to heaven. So I needed to fix that. And I started just working through, you know, this image that I had of Eve, much like I've shared with you already. I just saw her differently. I saw her as a woman in a world that was bigger than her. I saw her as someone who was deceived before she changed her actions. And then I saw me the more that I saw her. And so that's how Woman Evolved, the movement started. And yet, no matter how many cities we've toured, how many conferences we've had, there's still women who we can't wrap our arms around. And so the book just felt like the natural next step to making sure that we don't leave any woman behind as it relates to this revelation.
Your very first chapter is Rescue Eve, which
yes,
I love. It's like you're talking about how we often do the blame game, especially as Christians. Oh, we should blame Eve because she's the one that convinced Adam, blah, blah, blah. No, like Adam had a choice.
Yeah.
Like
Eve, he sure did.
Being the man should know, hey, this is not right. But, you know, guess what? Like we are, but ultimately I look at it as, okay, well, yes, God put them there. He gave us an amazing gift called free will, the ability to choose and make decisions, you name it. But he also knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
It was all part of God's perfect plan. And we can understand the perfect aspect of that because, you know, what is perfect apart from God?
But
if you look at everything that has gone on, you say, oh, how in the world is that perfect? Just wait.
Yeah.
Be patient. It all makes sense in the end. But what I love about your story is it's so powerful. It's so needful in this day and age. With everything that has gone on, we need to not just women, but men as well. We need to be always evolving because if we remain stuck or be in the past because of what's happened, we're not going to grow. We're not going to move forward. And then we're going to feel like life's not going anywhere. We're going to end up in a state of depression, despair, anxiety, stress, you name it. That's what happens. Because I believe that God did not create us to be stagnant. He created us to move forward. And that's one of the reasons why I love the message that your book is sending. And it's a powerful book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I can't agree more. What you said about we're always evolving and God did not create us to be stagnant. If we look at the ocean, if we look at the earth, if we look at the sun, the moons, the star, everything in creation speaks to the fact that God expects for everything he creates to move. And yet, if we're honest, there are moments in our life where we have experiences and we say, I'm stuck. No one knows we're stuck because we're still showing up at the job. We're still coming to the family reunions, but inwardly we're stuck. And so my job, I feel like my purpose, my mission on earth is to help you identify how we got stuck, so that we can figure out the plan to get unstuck, so we can get back to that evolving that is a part of who we are supposed to be in God.
Mm. Yeah, that's powerful. You also mentioned in your book, I noticed your purpose now has evolved. Yeah. And I'm curious, why does a person's purpose evolve over time? Why doesn't it remain the same?
Well, you know, I think that it starts with me even talking about blogging. So when I first started blogging, I'm like, my purpose is to be a blogger. Oh my goodness. This is the thing that I was created to do, was put words on a screen for people to receive it. And then I started speaking and it felt like speaking was just as effective as blogging. And I'm like, okay, my purpose is to be a blogger and to be a speaker. And yet I realized that the common thread to that, even as it relates to Woman Evolved, because now I'm like, okay, my purpose is to start a ministry. My purpose hasn't changed from blogger to speaker to now the founder of our ministry, it has evolved. And ultimately what has evolved is my ability to connect with people. So now when I look back to when I was a little girl, adults would tell me stuff that they would not tell my parents because they just felt safe enough to say things to me. And now I look at my life over the years, and that's basically what I do, is I create spaces for people to see themselves, to share what's in them. And then I have my responsibility, and that is to make sure that I lead them back to God. And so I think that evolution gives us freedom. So we don't think like, okay, my purpose is to be in this job forever. What is it that you're doing at that job that's making the difference? That purpose works anywhere you put it.
I love this. What I've realized in my life ultimately, and I've written about it in my first book, which is pretty exciting, but I think we need to start distinguishing between I am versus I do and how that relates to purpose. Yeah. So what a lot of people do is they think that, okay, my purpose in life is ultimately going to be what I get to do. And I think as a culture, we have sort of conditioned that. And we've made people believe, okay, that if you don't get this job, if you don't go to university, then you're going to be nothing in society and you're not going to be useful. That's not true at all, because who you are right now, that is a purpose. Your character, your values, your belief system, that is ultimately the best purpose, and that is what's going to evolve the most. You take who you are, your belief, your character, your values into your job. It's not the other way around. And that's when you do get a job, it's not that the job is evolving ultimately. You are evolving yourself to become better for the next position or whatever it is. So I think that's the kind of message that we need to be, and that's why I love you talking about it. We need to be sending this especially to young people.
Yeah. No, I love that you're writing about this, because I wrote about it in my book too. And I think that that's just like, just the spirit kind of saying the same thing to different people who can reach other people. Because, you know, I know that we talk so much now about purpose that people are like, where is it? Can I pick it up from Target? Is it going to ring the doorbell? Can Postmates ring? Like, I want to know where my purpose is. It's lost. And the truth is, like, your life is purpose. You and your existence and your being, if you bring intentionality to everything that you do, then your life on earth matters. So the question isn't, where is my purpose coming? It is, what is the purpose and what I'm doing here? It's not just a job. It's an opportunity to shed light to my coworkers. It's not just raising the kids. It's an opportunity to shape the next generation. You bring the purpose when you are a part of whatever is happening in your world. And I think that we've got to start empowering people to think more like that, instead of waiting for something to come to them, and then they'll have character and integrity and all of those things that we should have had in the first place.
Just keep going. Like, listen to you for ages. I love, okay, so if I was to pick up your book, which I have done, and turn to any page or chapter that is going to give me a renewed perspective, that is going to give me a challenge, that is really going to give me the most out of this book, what chapter or page would you recommend?
The chapter called Know Better. Know Better is K-N-O-W Better. And I feel like that chapter is the one that would help everyone who picks it up, because we think we know better, but there is a difference between thinking and knowing. And I use an analogy in the book. It's like, when I think I need to lose weight, I work out in the mornings and then I eat French fries to treat myself. But when I know I need to lose weight, I'm eating the salad, I'm throwing away the food out of the fridge, because there is a knowing that changes your actions. And how to get what we think to become what we know is why we can't break certain patterns and certain cycles, and we end up on this merry-go-round called life. And so that Know Better teaches us how to allow that knowing to show up in our everyday decision making, and teaches who we have to become in order to do that.
So speaking about knowing better, how do we know that something is actually true or not?
For me, it starts with understanding my relationship with God. This is an excellent question. When I have an encounter with God, just in worship or prayer, there is an environment that is created within myself. All of a sudden, I'm not as afraid as I was. I'm not as fearful as I was. We're talking to like a moment of meditation. And then I asked myself, what can live in this atmosphere? In an atmosphere of worship, I can't say, you know, I'm stupid. In an atmosphere of worship, I can't say, you know, I'm failing at this. In the atmosphere of worship, in the atmosphere of just being one with my Creator, there are certain things that cannot live. Truth for me is what can live in the presence of God. And when we begin to attack what is not truth in our life, we make room for more truth. So if we have a relationship that can't exist in that environment or an addiction that can't exist in that environment, then that's got to be what we end up attacking, because we can't afford to have anything in our life that can't live in the environment that produces the best version of ourselves.
Mm. I like that. I really like it. You're making me think a lot during this conversation. You're opening my mind up to many different thoughts that I hadn't really thought about yet. So I like this. So speaking about knowing truth, knowing God as your personal Lord and Savior, for someone that doesn't know God, that needs to know Him but is wrestling with that truth in their life, what kind of message would you send to them?
You know, I actually start with, and it's going to sound crazy, is that sometimes it is easier for us to believe that evil exists than it is for us to believe that good exists. Mm. And yet we have to recognize that if evil exists, that there is a counter to everything, right? That it's not just evil standing alone. There's got to be something that is opposite that evil. And so I think being open to that paradigm is one thing. I think another thing is to recognize that anywhere we have experienced love, anywhere we have experienced kindness, that is the antidote to evil. And then to go deeper and to think, what is the source of that? I think it's unfortunate sometimes that when we have an image of God, that we can only think in terms of humanity. We're talking about something that's so much bigger than that. I've never met a person who looked at the ocean, who looked at the stars, who looked at the sky and didn't think to themselves, there's got to be something bigger out there. God is that bigger that is out there. And yet He's willing to trickle down into forms that we can experience, like through our friendships, like through opportunities, like through moments of connection like this, that serve as a reminder to us that I am sitting high, but I know how to get down low and to meet you right where you are. So sometimes we have to start macro before we get to the micro. And sometimes we see God in the micro into the macro. But whatever it takes, I would challenge you to recognize that there is an answer to evil, and that is in the goodness of God. And we can experience it anytime we're willing to open our eyes to it.
I could leave it there, but I won't, because that was a perfect, perfect ending message. But I have a few final questions for you, if you don't mind, Sarah.
Okay.
Is anything missing in your life currently?
No. Mm. No, because if it was supposed to be here, it would be here.
Oh,
I believe that.
I love it.
I believe that wholeheartedly. And because I thought that there was something missing from my life for a very long time. And then I see how my life has changed. And my life didn't change because anything was added. It's because I became aware of the power of what I have left. And so I trust everything that's in my life right now. I don't think anything's missing.
That's good. Okay. This is more of a fun question, and then I'll get to the two final tougher questions. but what would you say has been the weirdest food combination you've ever tried?
This is a very strange question, and yet I'm going to try and answer it. Weirdest. Oh God. Okay. So my uncle is like 6'11" and he's just a big guy. And he's huge. He's a huge man. And he told me that one of his favorite things to eat are Chick-fil-A sandwiches with a Krispy Kreme donut smashed in between the sandwiches. And, you know, like the clown that I am, I told him that it's got to be gross. It's fat. It sounds like a heart attack in a bag. And then I asked him to let me try it. And, you know, it is very good, but you have to overcome the idea that, like, I am eating myself literally probably to my death. So it's just like one of those things you taste and then you try to lose out of your mind.
Oh, I love that because I do the exact same thing.
Are you serious?
I am serious. I love it. Like, it is the combination between savory and sweet, especially in a donut. Oh,
it's delicious.
There's this place here in Sydney, which you've got to definitely try if you ever come to Sydney, Sarah. It's called Burger Point, and they've got this burger called the Marvin Glaze. Now, they've put either two or three meat patties in the burger. You've also got bacon. It's maple bacon, so it's like extra sweet. And then you've got cheese, and then the top of the bun is like this Krispy Kreme kind of glaze over it. And they've put, like, it's making me hungry thinking about it, but they put these, like, there's cheese on top of that just sort of matches it. It's like this perfect flavor. And what I do, this might be even weirder, is you can't get enough cheese, right? I always say this. So I get a bucket of cheese, and then I dip the burger in the cheese.
Wow.
And it is like, it is sensational.
You know, I'm supposed to be doing the Hillsong Conference in June in Sydney. And I want to forget that we ever had this conversation. I want to forget the whole thing, because if I remember any of it, I'll remember that one point. I want to lose the whole thing out of my mind.
I don't know if you can now, because it's stuck in the conversation.
I'm going to do my hardest. I'm praying tonight. I'm asking for the environment and all of those things I talked about to help me forget it.
Well, trust me, when you come to Sydney, there is so many amazing treats. Like, it'd be hard not to just give it a try.
I'm probably going to try it.
I love that. Okay. So switching gears a little bit to the more tougher questions.
Okay.
This is, this might be a hard one to answer, but we'll see how we go. If you were to ask a question to anyone alive or dead, who would it be, why, and what question would you ask them?
It used to be Eve. I used to want to, you know, ask her, like, was the fruit good? Like, the least you could do was answer, was the fruit good? Now let me see if I could ask a question to anyone dead or alive. Am I supposed to say Jesus? I should probably say Jesus. I would probably ask Jesus, like, I would just say, really? You know what I mean? Like, really? Like, really? I don't even know if I could formulate a question beyond just really, you know, because that's how I feel when I think about the cost and the love and the pain and the commitment and the posture. I think I would just say, really.
I'm just thinking about that. I want to ask him how.
Yeah.
Not why, how. Like, if you can give me a glimpse into how everything has just been so damn perfect.
Yeah.
Like, that would be my ultimate question. Even if I was, like, so afraid and I'd be trembling before him to even ask this question, because I can imagine his response.
Yeah.
And I think you can go to the Bible and you say, like, for people that have ever complained, like, you got Paul, who had a thorn in his side, and he asked God to remove it. Yeah. And then God just says, my grace is sufficient for thee. I think it'd be the similar. My grace is always sufficient for the entire world. And that's how I did it.
That's so amazing. You would think, you know, when this question is asked, you think that you'd have this long, powerful question. And yet we've got these one word questions that we just, that we know that God would understand, that Jesus would get, but that we can't even fully articulate.
And I think that's the sheer power of God's presence and
for sure
his holiness. But yeah, one day when we do get to heaven, I've got more questions than just that one, but we have all eternity to ask him. My final question for you, Sarah, this is my all-time favorite question I ask everyone at the end. So it's a hypothetical one. So I want you to imagine with me for a moment that you've been able to reach the age of 100. All your friends and your family have decided to put together a film for you of everything you've ever said and everything you've ever done. Don't ask me how in the world they got it all. We'll call it magic for sake of argument. But they've been able to get it and show it to you on your 100th birthday. What do you want that film to say and to show about your life?
I wanted to say that I led my family and my friends to the same level of freedom, confidence, and acceptance that people say that I get to do to those who are not connected to me, that I didn't just minister to the world and not become ministry for my family.
That is a great way to end this conversation. Sarah, Jake, Jakes Roberts, thank you so much for your time today. I acknowledge everything that you're doing. I love your message. Where can people find your book and connect with you?
My books are available everywhere. Books are sold, Woman Evolve. I'm so excited about this message. And if you want to continue the journey with me, you can find me on all of the socials, Facebook, Instagram, at Sarah with an H. Don't forget my H, Sarah Jakes Roberts.
It's not hard to find. But Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the Storybox podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I really don't like this part because it means that sadly we have come to an end of yet another story. I just want to say thank you to all of you for tuning in and listening to our guest today. It is my prayer that you would have felt inspired, motivated, challenged in some way, and that you would have learned something new as well. If you would like to hear more amazing stories like this one, you can do so now by searching up the Storybox on all podcast platforms. It is that easy. And if you did get something from today's guest, please do share it around with your friend or family member who you feel could benefit from hearing today's story. And before you go, I greatly appreciate it if you could spend 30 seconds leaving a rating review over on Apple Podcasts. It goes a long way to reaching more people and building this community of the Storybox. Let's start changing lives through powerful stories like this one you heard today. Your support is always greatly appreciated. Until next time, when we dive back into the story box, I'm Jay Phantom. And don't forget, your story is worth more than you know. I'll catch you then.